This is Upstate's HealthLink On Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Sudden infant death syndrome is the leading cause of death among infants aged 1 month to 1 year. And the most up-to-date statistics show that in 2009, 2,200 infants died from it. Here with more on this troubling problem for our Peds to Parents segment and what can be done about it to protect babies are Amanda Griffin, the coordinator for Safe Kids Upstate New York Coalition, led by Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital, and Clemencia Molina, Regional Coordinator for the Central New York Sudden Infant and Child Death Resource Center. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Clemencia, let me start with you. Help us understand what we mean when we say SIDS, which is Sudden Infant Death Syndrome.
Well, SIDS is a sleep-related death that occurs in babies from 1 month to 1 year, although the highest incidence is before 6 months. It falls under a bigger umbrella of sudden unexpected infant death, which also encompasses other sleep-related deaths like suffocation, entrapment, and strangulation that can happen in unsafe sleep environments.
Okay, so when we talk about SIDS or the syndrome, to this point in time, do we really understand what causes it in most cases?
We have a lot of theories that are helping us begin to understand what may be happening. There isn't anything definitive because the research is ongoing. There's multiple theories, and we believe many things are interacting to bring a child to the point of death due to SIDS. For example, one of the leading researchers in America, Dr. Hannah Kinney, really is looking at the brainstem, which controls breathing, blood pressure, heart rate, all that, as having to do with the baby's inability to survive at some point when it doesn't function as it should.
But there are no clues to this kind of thing in advance of the event. Is that the case?
No, it usually occurs with babies that are healthy, haven't had any difficulties. They are put to sleep at any given point, and it is a sudden, unexpected death when they don't wake up.
Mm. Well, it seems to me, though, that you also mentioned this larger umbrella. So we're talking about sleep or sleep time as the focus. And you also mentioned things like potential entrapment or strangulation. So it sounds to me like in terms of prevention, doing something about our sleep environment seems to be the major focus. Is that correct?
That's absolutely key. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics released a series of recommendations to keep babies safe. They did so, it was an update on 2011, and they are wonderful because they help reduce the risk of both the syndrome and the other more mechanical accidental deaths of suffocation, etc.
I think that's very clear. So you're saying, though we may not actually know what causes the syndrome of SIDS, sudden infant death, we do know that a safe sleep environment certainly can be potentially prophylactic in all cases.
Yes, absolutely.
So help us understand then, what is a safe sleep environment?
Well, a safe sleep environment, if we could do a picture on the air, is an environment that is empty of obstacles that could get in the way of the baby breathing freely and well. So things that we typically tend to think of as appropriate, like blankets and stuffed animals and pillows and burp rags and all sorts of sweet things, sweet in quotation marks, are really dangerous and hazardous.
Potential airway obstructors.
Yes, absolutely.
I know when I was raising my kids, the whole kind of phenomenon has changed, or the concept has changed. I mean, we were told to put bumpers along the edges of the crib. Now those are verboten. You're
That's
not allowed
right.
to have bumpers inside.
Several states in the United States have made them illegal, in fact, because they are dangerous. But it's also, once we have an empty crib, there are other things that really also need to be in place for the safety of the baby.
The thing that strikes me more than anything is how it's changed from in terms of the position. Again, we were told, and my children are in their late 20s, early 30s. So this is quite a while ago, but at that point we were told baby should be on its tummy always to sleep so that it will not suffocate. It can turn its head to the side and will not suffocate, whereas on its back, the whole idea of aspiration was concerning. So what's the current status?
The current is the baby should be on the back for every sleep. And in fact, your children being 30 years old makes sense that they got that advice, because on the back has been around now for about 20 years. So that would have come after. Mm-hmm. And many people don't believe it because it is almost counterintuitive. People imagine themselves on the back and thinking they would choke and then project that onto the baby. But if you look at the anatomy of a baby, the esophagus, and the trachea, you can really understand, and I wish we could do this on the radio, how aspiration is less likely on the back.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Clemencia Molina, Regional Coordinator for the Central New York Sudden Infant and Child Death Resource Center, and Amanda Griffin. She's the Coordinator for Safe Kids Upstate New York Coalition. We're talking about SIDS, Sudden Infant Death, and I'm asking Clemencia more to explain a little bit more about what else contributes to a safe sleep environment. The American Academy of Pediatrics had a whole laundry list of things.
Yes, well, one thing to really also pay attention to is a flat, firm surface. We don't want any fluffy surfaces or even old surfaces that are concave, where you would put a baby and have the surrounding area rise up around the baby's nose. So that's why we insist on flat and firm.
How about this notion of sleeping with a parent?
That's very controversial, but definitely another body near a baby is another obstacle. We know that the first year of bringing a baby into the world requires a lot of stamina, and parents are very tired, so you have the element of exhaustion. You can fall asleep and not know where your own limbs are or where the baby is near to you, and you could overlay them.
So that basically what you're recommending is not to sleep with the baby, not to bring the baby into your bed, clearly.
We recommend a separate sleep surface for the baby that is just for the baby, where they can be free of anything that can get in the way of their breathing.
Do you think that, what's the current thought about a pacifier?
There's a lot of thought that a pacifier will help the baby stay at a higher level of arousability, which is very important to a baby's survival in the first year. We want them closer to the surface than in a deep sleep, because as part of the thinking around the brainstem, if the brainstem happens to be going through a little bit of a developmental glitch, it may not help the baby as it needs to rise up, arouse out of sleep, and wake up. So we really don't want to put the baby on the belly, which induces deeper sleep. And we want to do a pacifier if the baby takes to it, to keep them doing that non-nutritive sucking, which keeps them quite awake.
What else? What role does temperature play, body temperature? In other words, you know, we're entering into the winter now, and obviously we want to keep babies warm, but is there a danger of overheating?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Temperature is key. A little baby in the first year is not going to have the same ability to regulate their temperature as those of us around this table. So we don't want to put them in a situation where they get too hot. That's why we have the program we have. We are giving away sleep sacks, which help keep the baby warm, allows for escape of body heat if need be, and does not add a loose blanket to the bedding that could also suffocate the baby. So our program is really addressing that.
Well, I'm going to get to the program and to Amanda in just one second, but I have a question for you. Given all of these changes that have taken place in the last 20 years, have we seen a decrease in the amount of SIDS or death from unexpected reasons.
Yeah. We have both good and not so good news. 20 years ago, when we discovered that on the back was really imperative to survival, we saw a reduction in SIDS of about 50%.
Wow, that's staggering, actually.
It really helped us understand the position was key. However, in the last 10 years, we seem to have plateaued. So we are facing a time where we have to get even more creative about spreading the message to new parents, to parents who have parented before like you with old information and get the new information to them, and to all the generations, grandparents who sit and occasional sitters.
Also, it sounds to me like more research needs to be done to try to really understand a little bit more, as you had mentioned, with brainstem development, what other contributing factors might be playing role when you look at the whole picture.
Yes, as part of the recommendations of the Academy, that is, we are asking for continued funding for further surveillance.
So, Amanda, what is Safe Kids Upstate New York Coalition, and what are you doing to promote safe sleep right now?
Sure. So Safe Kids Upstate New York Coalition is a community organization. As you mentioned, we're led by the Children's Hospital, and we provide education and outreach to the community to prevent unintentional injuries from occurring. Some of our primary focuses in the past couple years have been child passenger safety, car seat checks, getting bicycle helmets out into the community, hosting sports safety clinics. But we really wanted to take an initiative and address safe sleep this past year. So with doing that, we launched a safe sleep awareness campaign along with our community partners. We are getting 2,200 sleep sacks out into the community via through patients that are up at Upstate Galliseno Children's Hospital, infant patients, patients, newborns over at the Jim and Dee Walsh Family Birth Center at Upstate Communities Campus, as well as Cortland County Health Department, Madison County Health Department, and of course our Reach CNY partner. We're also giving out tip sheets to really provide parents and new parents, expectant parents, with the right information to keep their child safe in a sleep environment.
So this is free to parents?
It is free to the parents that are
at those
coming
various
through. Yes,
centers. Exactly.
So
where can people in general get more information about your program or about, you know, how to have safe sleep?
Well, they can certainly call me. I'm very, very local. They can go into...
Can you give us your phone number briefly?
315-424-0009, extension 108.
Okay.
They can go into Google and look up Safe Sleep, for example. Mm-hmm. It'll take them to very many websites. There's the National Institutes of Health who do the Safe to Sleep national campaign, and they're a wonderful resource.
Well, it also sounds to me like you're doing amazing work here in our community. We're very grateful for all of that work, and it sounds like, Amanda, this is a very, very important effort that you've undertaken for Safe Kids.
Definitely. We just launched last month, and we've had a great deal of success stories, parents who are very grateful to receive the information, especially at a time when they're inundated with information as a new parent, and a lot of mixed messages might be out, along those lines.
My guests have been Amanda Griffin, the coordinator for Safe Kids Upstate New York Coalition, led by Upstate Galliseno Children's Hospital, and Clemencia Molina, the regional coordinator for the Central New York Sudden Infant Death and Resource Center. Thank you so much for coming in. Very important information.
Thank you for
having us.
Appreciate your being here.